Hi, this is Paul, and because Twitter moves at the speed of Twitter, this has probably already passed, but I actually thought that this little really messy interchange between Jonathan Peugeot and James Lindsay is quite important because they're exactly at the place that the culture is sort of, at least Western culture, is sort of fighting right now. And many of the tensions that were there within ARC are right here in this interchange. Jonathan Peugeot sets it off 23 hours ago, so that's yesterday on Thanksgiving. Now, it's American Thanksgiving. Jonathan, for those of you around the world, American Thanksgiving and Canadian Thanksgiving are in two different months. Canadian Thanksgiving's in October, maybe because it gets colder there faster. And American Thanksgiving is in November at the end of the month. And American Thanksgiving actually was initiated by Abraham Lincoln. You can read up on the whole question of the Indians and the pilgrims, et cetera. But so wasn't Thanksgiving for Jonathan Peugeot because he's Canadian. And he posts this thing on Twitter. Rockabye lock on the treetop. When the wind blows, the enlightenment will rock. When the bough breaks, the enlightenment will fall, and down will come freedom, the enlightenment and all. I don't know if he composed this one himself or if he found it somewhere, but this is sure to set off things in people's minds. Now, right below it is a very interesting little diagram, and the writing is in Spanish. El sueño de la razón produce monstruos, which means the dream of reason produces monstrosities. And so you have these owls and these strange birds and creatures sort of pecking at some enlightenment character who is there sleeping. Now, this is the touch point of so many things right now in our culture, because the worldview of John Locke has fallen, and the worldview of John Locke falling has resulted in a whole bunch of things politically and religiously coming to an end. And right now, this whole firestorm about Hirsi Ali has a lot to do with the Enlightenment. You find all of the celebrity atheists sort of rallying the cry about this, but the cognitive science of John Locke was very simple. And if you go back and look at his ideas of perception, he thought we were basically the tabula rasa, blank slates. Things out there in the world appear to us and are conceptualized by us, and that's how the world works. This has sort of given way to an epistemology much more of relationality instead of facts and objects. And, you know, this goes back to Jordan Peterson, the beginning of Maps and Meaning, a forum for action versus a forum of objects. All of this stuff is happening, and this is why modernity is going away. And this has deep philosophical implications that are playing out way, way, way down the line. Now, let me see. Now, Twitter is the Marquis de Sade is an Enlightenment thinker. Now, Twitter doesn't necessarily produce timelines that are so clean. I haven't read this piece yet, but I look forward to it. And then somewhere along the line, see if I can, Twitter is just a mess with this. So I'll click on this tweet, and then James Lindsay hops in, scratch a hippie, find a fascist every time. Now, pastoral advice would be, when people tweet stuff like this, it's often best to let it go or to give one response, but don't go back and forth. They went back and forth. And again, Jonathan's a big boy. He can do what he wants. Jonathan responds, "You're out of control, James, and moving into ad hominem is not a good look. Saying reason is not sufficient to uphold civilization does not make me either a hippie or a fascist." Jonathan Peugeot is neither a hippie nor a fascist. I can attest to that. You sent this from your satanic technology, I suppose, so Promethean, so, you know, and James does this on Twitter. And so a back and forth gets going. And does any of this matter? It really does, because this is, in fact, where we are at in the culture. And all of the stuff that we've been talking about ARC, about government, about all of this stuff is connected to this. And it gets at what is the nature of reality. And the Enlightenment liked to imagine that you could just sort of separate facts from perception. And of course, via philosophy, phenomenology came in. And the one way to understand Jonathan Peugeot and to listen to him and to others around him is to understand that, in fact, the world of facts is a subgroup of the world of perception. It's sort of the order that you place these things in that is the difference between these two approaches to the world. And again, Jordan Peterson goes through this with Maps of Meaning. John Vervaeke deals with this in terms of cognitive science, and this has implications in terms of religion, but especially in terms of politics. And right now, it's sort of seething in politics, given how things are sort of coming undone because the old modern ways, the Enlightenment ways, are coming to an end. And some people say, well, we have to go back. There really is no going back. Going forward is never a complete going back, on and on and on. Now, I do not have time to go into this whole video today because I wanted to be just in the office a little bit, because I want to get home, because I've got kids who are living in other places who are visiting home right now, and I want to have all of that fun stuff at home, so I got to get through all of my stuff today. But one of the things that the Ian Hersey Ali thing for me is forcing me to ask deeper questions about many of these issues connected with it. And one of the people that I haven't given any treatment on my channel is Sarah Haider, H-A-I-D-E-R. Algo served up for me this 5-month-old conversation on trigonometry, which is absolutely amazing. I'm only going to come in at the end. Constantine Kissin, we're sort of watching his... There's a reason all of these people are becoming Christians. There's a reason for it. And it has everything to do with this little fight between James and Jonathan. It has everything to do with Tom Holland and Ian Hersey Ali. And because when you look at more extreme examples like Islam, the issues come to the surface, because this is enormously complicated. But let's jump into a little bit of what Constantine has to say. Now, remember, this is 5 months ago. Now he's the one saying, I'm not religious yet. Well, you can see it already churning here, and it's going to be interesting to look at the evolution of Ian Hersey Ali and Sarah Haider as they go forward. Now, two people are always different. They have different lifestyles, yada, yada, yada. But this questions about Western liberalism and how we have it, these are the questions at play. And this is why ARC has arisen as it has, and what society should be. But there are roots beneath it. Someone asked about religion. Religion is dollars. Politics is cents. If you look at Jordan Peterson, you have a value hierarchy, and your religion, whether it's explicit or implicit, creates that value hierarchy, and the politics is sort of the attempt to apply the value hierarchy to the rest of the world.
Sir, let's wrap this up in a slightly interesting way, because you mentioned being an atheist. When I was probably 18, 20, I found that way of thinking very appealing. Now I'm agnostic, and I think that's likely where I'm going to stay. But you hear a lot of people talk about the fact that, and I have some sympathy with this argument, that the decreasing religiousness of the West has allowed things like wokeness to step into that void. Mm-hmm. What do you as an atheist make of that argument?
I think it's an interesting argument, yeah. And makes me very uncomfortable.
And of course, this is Peter Boghossian's substitutionary thing. Of course, Peter is a friend of James. Now, again, there's sort of a desire to have... Twitter is not the place to have a fight, people. Don't fight on Twitter. You know, make your statement, maybe one response, and then leave it be. Just don't go back and forth. It never goes anywhere. The whole reason I act the way I do in this little corner is if you want to have a productive conversation, you have to set the table.
Can imagine.
but yeah, I think there's, it's fascinating and adds a complication to, you know, what I would as an atheist prefer to think and be true about the world and human nature, really. And how we optimize for the best kind of society. I would prefer that a society in which there's no religion, mm-hmm. You know, and also somehow...
Again, no religion, except your conceptualization of religion is an enlightenment construct, which right now is basically coming apart in everyone's hands.
We have solved for dogma, you know, the dogma that might come in other forms. I think that's the best society of all.
Sure.
But is that a possible society?
Probably not.
Is it possible for us to not have religious dogma and to also somehow resist every other kind of dogma? Is that a possible world? So from that perspective, you know, a secular but religious, does that make sense?
Yes.
World is in some ways worse, you know, the worst of all, you know, possible outcomes, you know, maybe even as bad as ancient, you know, religious contexts. So that's, I think that's a very interesting train of thought. I'm not sure where I end up there at the moment. I do think that there is a psychological need, I think, for the comfort of some kind of transcendental values, you know. I think they can be routed in other ways. I don't think you need God, but I think you need them to be bigger than you.
And again, the issue, of course, is that they need to... And the thing about God that really bothers people is the personhood of God, that God is personal. Now, again, go back to Verveke in the Sacred interview and go back to Pascal in the Spirit of Finesse and the Spirit of Geometry. If it's going to be bigger than you, it's going to have to be personal, because if it's impersonal, the bigness of your personhood will trump its impersonality every time, and you will try to wield it. That's the way this goes.
Need it to be something that draws you into the collective, into people around you, and something that gives you this sense of belonging and personal significance, but also, and this is a word that doesn't get used enough, duty towards others, you know? Like, not just that I belong here and you make me feel great and personally significant, that's wonderful, but also, what do you owe them? What do you owe your fellow man?
And the reason people are recognizing this is because it does scale. I mean, in terms of a marriage, there needs to be duty. Well, what? How does that work? But then you've got persons. And if you were married to a thing and not a person, it would be totally different. Duties happen between persons. I mean, and again, back to Verveke and the Sacred interview. I mean, all this scales up, in fact, to the Trinity. So now I'm ticking off Jews and Muslims with this video.
I think that's that idea of duty is what is a cornerstone of communities, you know, and we're seeing the fraying of communities all over the Western world.
So aren't you and I, isn't this our fault?
A little bit, maybe, yeah. Insofar as we can't find something else, insofar as that we can't address this problem in some other creative way. But ultimately, I think this is where modernity is going. This is the path that we're walking down, sort of alienation from each other, from the physical world, from broader, the world around us, our neighbors, that kind of thing. We're increasingly alienated from, and that's a modernity challenge. Can you bring religion back and say that this is the solution? I don't know. I don't know if you can force yourself to believe something that is, you know, not true. I don't think I could. I think that even if I thought religion was very good.
No, you start believing it is true. That's how it works. Ask Ayaan Hirsi Ali. You might not get all the way there right away, and it might be a process, and it might take years, but that's what's happening.
I don't think I could go back to it.
Well, this is where I am, because I think I know and have experiences of knowing that religion, not Islam actually, but Christianity, some forms of Christianity can be very bad.
Mm-hmm.
And Islam, clearly, there are some forms of that or some people who follow it who can be very bad. But the level of society, I look around and I'm kind of going, you said it yourself, you need something that's above you. You need something that connects you to other people. You need the community in a world that's becoming increasingly detached from, in which we become detached from each other. I don't know that we've come up with an alternative. Woke people have. And I'm like, you know what? I'd rather be an Anglican. If that's the choice, Anglicanism works for me compared to this crap.
But that's not really a religion anymore, is it?
Well, let's not get into that. We have 5 minutes left or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So how can we advocate for, or not advocate, but how can we say, well, you know, agnosticism is good or being an atheist is good, when we look around and we go, the practical consequences of the lack of religion are bad?
Mm. Yeah, I wouldn't say that it's exactly the practical consequences of a lack of religion. I think they're all that the lack of religion and the incidents of more wokeism in the world or more senses of alienation, they're all being caused by another factor, you know, that's happening together. That is, it seems to me that there's nothing we can really do about with the tools that we have at our disposal at the moment.
You mean technology?
Technology has a big role to play in the overall alienation that we feel and the various social consequences. I mean, you can't even use, you think of the social fabric, it doesn't even make sense to think of it as a fabric. It's not a fabric. We're individual threads floating around and we're knotted up in one piece or another in one online community or space and isolated there. I think the problem is a bigger one, and I don't know if old religion has the tools to solve it, partially because, well, it makes a lot of claims about the real world, and they have an effect, not a good one. And it is hard to get the, you know, a 17-year-old to believe in the literal truth of something that's making claims that are not true in the natural world, and we know for a fact, and they know for a fact. You can't hide this from them anymore. So the ways in which religion is literally not true is a hurdle that I don't know if it can overcome, insofar as we're considering what is a solution. What
I get
is,
it. You know, I'm stuck in exactly the same.
Right there. See, again, first, don't use that word literally. That word does not mean what you think it means. You might say physically. And I got to get into Doug Wilson's bit. Because in some ways, Doug Wilson is still over on the modernist side too. And some people are making the leap beyond modernism and working through these things. But the getting beyond doesn't mean you lose correspondence, but you understand the complexity of language with respect to many of these issues. And, I mean, because you can't lose this... you can't lose a correspondence theory of truth and you know, believe in things like the physical nature of the resurrection and the ascension and many of these things. But I think, as Lewis showed in Miracles, you also have to understand that language is by nature metaphorical. And having, let's say, numbers on, there's a high power between, let's say, numbers on an account and ledger and boxes in the warehouse, and that's an important thing, but reality is richer and broader than just that. This is so hard.
What would convince you, really? I mean, that's what the solution is. What would it be that would change you?
Well, we've been sitting, so our friends who we're staying with here, they're Christians. And we've spent every night sitting right around here arguing this back and forth, and they're very clever people,
yeah,
and I respect them very much, but there's nothing that can convince me of that. But on the other hand, I am extremely convinced that without community, without connection, which they have, because if you're a Christian, you go to church, you have a community, the way you relate to other people is different and so on. You know, without that, human beings are not designed to live in this world that we live in now. When we not designed, we didn't evolve. Sorry, triggering word to an atheist. We did not evolve to live alone, to live in disconnected, disembodied life. And so I feel it's, you know, particularly I became a father recently, I'm thinking about this, like, what are we offering people?
Mm-hmm.
Because this disembodied, disconnected existence is not good for us.
No. And I think it's fraying away at every important element of human existence. Like, I mean, not to be too grandiose about it, but I think it's true that relationships, you know, sex, people aren't having sex, people don't have friendships, people are isolated and alone and plugged into these digital spaces that are very toxic and damaging to them. They are encouraged to conceive of themselves as the end product, right? As the picture at the end that you post on your profile, and the video that you take of yourself as almost a performer first, and to think about yourself in third person all the time, and to be signaling all the time. It's an exhausting way to live, and I think it's not a surprise to me that Zoomers are, you know, they're just fucked up. They have a lot of problems. And it seems like not a lot of solutions. I don't have an answer for you. And I just don't think that it would be nice, maybe, if we can have a nice form of Christianity. Can we, though? Can we, you know, pass that on?
This is where this is going. I mean, this is what's happening.
To a 13-year-old that has access to the internet and finds Reddit atheism, and they're all like, this is why it's wrong, and then you stop believing, right? So long as we don't have a choice in the matter of belief or not belief, it is important that they are making literal claims about the world that are not true. And I think will affect the ability of even a nice Christianity to go very far.
In other words, you do in fact need a whole coherent worldview. You have to wrestle with all the questions. You have to deal with the science questions. But again, as John Vervaeke keeps saying, you know, science doesn't establish its own foundations. And so then you have the Christian foundations of science. And it is this process of re-putting together this world that this little corner is about and all of these conversations are about.
In moving people and pulling them away from the disconnectedness that we're seeing around us. There has to be some other solution. But I was in charge of creating communities when I was, you know, running my organization. And it was a very interesting experience in that I recognized how religion is very useful at creating good and healthy communities, in fact. You know, and the religious communities are demonized a lot, sometimes fairly, I think oftentimes fairly, and then sometimes unfairly. And so there's some benefits to that form of organization, and it provides benefits to the people, to the members of that community. And it's hard to replicate that without these kinds of values tying you together.
Again, go see my one appearance on Unbelievable about the formation of atheist communities. And the very lovely man was like, and I told him, I said, this should be your heyday right now. This your unbelieving community should just be flourishing all over the place. And he's like, nobody joins.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to be a challenge. But, you know, to end on a kind of an optimistic note, I think human beings are very adaptable. And yes, technology is throwing a lot of problems at us very quickly, which makes things difficult it's difficult for us, I think, to adapt quickly. But it is very possible that we do. It's very possible that we become, you know, immune to the kind of siren songs of social media and like the online world and find a way back to something a little bit more healthy.
Sarah, it's been a wonderful interview. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Now, I want to treat the whole interview because the whole interview is absolutely outstanding. And I really enjoy the broadening of the cast, let's say. And I also want to spend some time with Konstantin Kissin's interview with Chris Williamson that I listened to on my way to Europe, which was another outstanding interview. And the conversation is clearly making progress. Not so much on Twitter, but we're clearly making progress in this. And as I told to Peter Boghossian, I'm tremendously optimistic. To be a Christian means to be an optimist, because this comes out Monday after my rough draft, and my rough draft deals with Josiah and this reformation that happens with Josiah, and then right afterwards you have just the complete collapse of the Southern Kingdom and years of exile, yada yada yada. So, but to be a Christian is to be an optimist, because Jesus is Lord, because Jesus is reigning, and bit by bit, we will get there. So, Jonathan and James, I would of course host a conversation between you two. I don't know. I frankly don't know if that could be had or even best done online. Actually, maybe what I should do is have an event where I have James and Jonathan together, because in an event, then you can, well, then you have a meal together and then you sit down together and then Jonathan is very challenging for a lot of atheist types to really get and understand. So anyway, leave a comment. Let me know what you think.